It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Andy will be here. He's got to adjourn court and go into his chambers, but we're going to get him in a little bit, along with Jason Snell and Alex Lindsay. What happened Friday night? So many Apple users were kicked out of their accounts, we speculate. Is it really going to be the M4 and the iPad Pro? We're only a week away from the announcement. Alex says, couldn't possibly be. And we'll talk about Siri. Is it the stupidest of all the assistants? And can it get better? It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 919, recorded Tuesday, April 30th, 2024. Thinkos. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest Apple news. Andy is at the Boston Public Library struggling with his setup. So we'll start the show with Jason Snell back from Memphis, Tennessee.
I'm here. Hello. I'm back.
The beautiful St. Jude Hospital out there. Great to see you back. Welcome back.
Good to be here.
Also here, of course, Alex Lindsay from officehours.global and 090.media. Hello, Alex Lindsay.
Good to be.
So you all mocked me when I said, hey, I wonder, would maybe they'd put the M4 in the iPad?
Yep.
You all said, oh, no.
I said, no, Leo, no. Don't think that was the first thing I thought of Sunday morning when I was sipping my tea reading Mark Gurman's email.
And Mark could very well be wrong, although usually Mark, when he goes so big with something.
He's not very certain. He's like, I'm hearing that it might be.
What did he hear?
He said it's possible that the new iPads announced next week will have an M4 processor, which is bananas, and I still don't think I believe it, and will tout AI features. I don't know, Leo. Like, I'm sorry. I apologize. Obviously, your supposition that that might be an M4 is more possible than I thought.
I was just guessing. I knew nothing, so, you know.
I think it comes down to how desperate Apple has been recently in terms of pulling up perception of them as getting, you know, serious about AI. Like, WWDC is going to be in a month. So I don't know if an extra month, it's weird, right? Because this iPad was rumored to happen a couple months ago and then it got shifted. Mark Gurman said at the time it was because of software. I think we all assumed that that software was going to be like for the accessories. But now I don't think it's impossible that they might take a chip that maybe it's on the new fab, right? There was a new fab
that's starting a new process
at TSMC. It might literally be the M3 on a new process that they might or might not even call M4. It could be M3X or something like that. And then software wise, even though we made all those assumptions, like if they had some AI features either in the OS or in some of the apps, iPad apps that were plausibly, like, what if they delayed it a couple of months so that they could pull some of those features forward a little, given that they were only a month away from being released as a developer beta, so that they could prime the pump and use this product launch to talk about AI a little bit sooner. So I don't think it seems really weird and unlikely to me, and like a game of telephone has gone on, but I can't say it's impossible. So
I think
on that, I apologize.
I often feel that what people think Apple is zigzagging oftentimes is them getting more information and saying, well, Apple's panicking and doing X, Y, and Z. In a consumer hardware world, whatever chip was going in there a year ago. So whatever chip they're adding into it, there's just no other way. You can't make the turn. Like, there's so much that has to go on with the fabs and the process and how it's going to integrate. So it wasn't like Apple decided this is all a big deal in September and started to have meetings, and then in January decided they're going to put an M4 instead of an M3. If there's an M4 next week, there was an M4 before WWDC last year.
Are you sure? I don't know if I agree with you on that, Alex. I understand what you're saying, but here's my scenario. TSMC was saying we're not going to have the N3E, the 3-nanometer E-node, until late 2024. That was their roadmap until maybe recently.
Well, that's
so TSMC comes to you and says, and admittedly, it wouldn't be yesterday. It would be in December or, you know, whenever they started making these things, and says, you know what? Surprise, we have the process now. Apple, I think you're right too, Jason, is very concerned about being behind in AI and wants to make a big splash. You know, we know, we've heard that the iOS 18 will be AI focused, but it would be very, and we've also heard that an M4 would have more machine learning processors, would be focused more on that. It would be very interesting if they, so say maybe September, maybe it was September, TSMC says, hey, you know what? I think we're going to have enough M4s for you to use by spring. And Apple says, ah, this interesting. And we're pushing really hard. We really want to get an AI. We've got this OLED iPad Pro. I don't think, honestly, moving to OLED is enough for me as a iPad Pro, M1 iPad Pro owner to jump. But M4 with, and really a big focus on iPad OS, on AI, that I would actually, I think, have to buy an iPad. Now, what's possible is, we know they have an event. They announced an event. It's next Tuesday. But what's possible is they may say on Tuesday, and the new iPad Pro with M4 coming out June 8th, right? They may
or
not.
October. Or October. You know, like if they're announcing it now and they're saying October, then maybe they did something at the last minute. But if they say it's shipping in a week or 2 weeks or in June, it takes so long. It's not just the fab. It's how that chip integrates. It's testing those chips. It's doing all those things at a consumer level, at Apple's level. Now, other companies can probably move faster, but half of the stuff goes out that doesn't work. So you know, and so I just don't think that, I think that this is the boat. It's just a big ship.
So are you saying slowly. It's unlikely an M4 or that that it was always an M4?
I'm saying that if we get an M4 next week, it was going to be an M4 a year ago. There's just the ship is too big to turn that fast. And it's just, you can't, you know, build those in. Now, they may be exposing more. What they can do is in software go, hey, this thing that's in the back end, we're going to talk about it and it's going to be in beta, and they can release software things. You know, so they can say they could show more machine learning things that Apple has been working on for a decade. You know, like, and they're bringing those things to the surface faster than they would have otherwise. Bringing software to the surface fast is easy, or not easy, but it's easier. Bringing hardware, shifting gears again, it's different than professional level software. It's different than people willing to have a certain level of loss. Apple doesn't have that, they don't have those luxuries. And so as a result, this ship is a giant ship that just doesn't have the trim to say in September, we want to change what's happening in April.
So here's the thing about narratives, right? Like, one of the challenges here is we've got the cold, hard, kind of like hardware reality, and then we have narratives. And there are a few narratives, right? Marketing, Apple marketing is a narrative. And we've seen them pick up the cause of AI in their marketing. We saw it with the MacBook Air, which is suddenly the world's greatest consumer AI laptop. Like, that is just a shift in marketing. Hardware didn't change. The hardware was planned years in advance, but they changed the marketing. There's also Bloomberg's narrative, and we've talked about it here, where Bloomberg is trying to put Apple's moves in the context of their other reporting about Apple and about the trends in the tech industry. So they want to talk about AI as a trend, and they want to, but what's the hardware reality? My guess is, I think Alex is right. Hardware has to be planned out way in advance. It is possible that Apple and TSMC always we're talking about the possibility of doing a new chip, whether and what it's called is marketing, right? It could be called the M4. It could be called the M3X. It could just not be called anything, M3 again. But they might have been talking about this new process. They might have said, we can get you a low volume in mid-year next year, let's say 2024. We could get you a low volume then. And Apple's like, well, we could maybe put that in the iPad Pro, because that's for Apple. That's a really low volume product, right? It doesn't sell at the level of other products. It's a high-end iPad. The iPad sells about the same as the Mac units-wise, but this is the high-end iPad. So maybe they're like, oh, actually, why don't we start with that? And we can do that first. And then the narrative builds up around it, which is, oh, this is Apple rushing to do AI. But like, I agree with Alex. The hardware would have had to be planned. And if there is a chip surprise, it's not going to have been a surprise that happened in 3 months. It's going to be more like, yeah, they made a move with TSMC maybe to be a little more aggressive sometime, maybe last year, maybe. But the software side is totally right. Like, they could push and think about it. Developer betas would have shipped mid-June. If they had like some apps that were kind of close to being ready for developer beta, and back in February or January, they said, let's pull that forward and put it in a special build of iPad OS for shipping in May. They could do that. That was doable. Or some brief basic AI integration. They could do that faster. So that's why I keep thinking this isn't a no from me. I think that this might be have some truth to it, but it's way more complicated, and it's easy to get the hardware realities mixed up in the narrative. And
well, and I think that yeah. Bloomberg often benefits in viewership by acting like everything's a panic. You know, they're panicking.
That's why you got to be on the Bloomberg terminal. You got to know immediately about whatever is hot in that moment.
Rarely is Apple panicking. It's more of a like, oh, we should probably take a look at this and let's take a look at that. And
if they panic, how could they? I mean, like you're making the point about turning the ship. Even if they panic, what is an Apple panic look like?
There's nowhere to go.
It's you know, 6 months.
TSMC being aggressive about their timelines does not benefit them at all. Number one is Apple won't appreciate it, broadcasting that it's going to be earlier because that pushes competitors up and speeds things up. And number two is if you don't make those deadlines, then you look bad. And so there's no TSMC almost always is pretty conservative about what they say they can and can't do because there's no ROI for them to say that they can do something faster than they can.
Let's real quickly just see if we can get Andy on here because I think he's got it set up now at the library. Andy, can we hear you? He's fiddling with a knob on his Raspberry microphone. Okay, let me read you Mark Gurman's. Just leave his volume up, and if he suddenly starts talking, I'll know. Let me read you what we're all talking about. This is from Sunday's Power On newsletter. The new iPad Pro will kick off Apple's shift into AI hardware. I'm hearing there's a strong possibility. So there's the weasel words that you were talking about, Jason. That the chip in the new iPad Pro will be the M4, not the M3. I wonder why he wouldn't have heard that until now. That's interesting. Better if, right? Given what you guys said, better yet, I believe the Apple would position the tablet as the first truly AI-powered device and that it will tout each new product from then on as an AI device. This is in response to the AI craze. By introducing the new iPad Pro ahead of its WWDC in June, Apple could lay out its AI chip strategy without distraction. Then at WWDC, it could, and by the way, this is his speculation, I would guess, at this point. Mm-hmm. Then at WWDC, it could focus on how the M4 chip and the new iPad Pro will take advantage of the AI software and services coming as part of iPad OS later this year.
There's 18. A lot of marketing in here, and yeah. I would just say, I actually, the thing about it's going to be all AI from now on, it's like, I think he missed it. The MacBook Air was an AI product launch too. They specifically called out that it was the world's greatest consumer AI laptop or whatever. So like, we're already in the world where every product launch is going to talk about AI. It's not going to be new with the iPad. There may be more and there may be more detail, but even then it's very vague and he's really just saying they will tout AI features. It's like, okay, maybe there will be some AI features that they will put in that iPad OS update. And maybe that's even why it got delayed a couple months is that they wanted to pull those features forward. But the chip, it is so weird, right? Like, because chip stuff is slow. Chip stuff is slow, like Alex said. And so I'm just hearing about it now that it may be M4 rings to me like it's marketing. Like right. They've got a chip that might be maybe different enough that they could call it something
V2,
else.
V2, which wouldn't M3X, be such a big yeah. change, or 3X. Gurman also says, uh-huh. To be fair, these new products are not engineered and developed entirely around AI. This is partly about marketing, as you yep. say. Hardware with even more impressive capabilities is further out. This is a wild one. I don't remember reading this. He says, as I reported, Apple is working on a tabletop iPad connected to a robotic arm.
Yeah, that's the HomePod with a screen.
And an arm, sort of. Though. And an arm?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know about that.
Here is your coffee. Wait, I can't reach it.
Well, I think the idea is that it'll just follow you around wherever you are. You set it there, and it's like an Amazon Echo Show.
Echo has done that for years.
That yeah. follows you around.
Yeah.
That's all.
It's a little creepy, by the way, because it doesn't just follow you when you talk to it. It follows you as you walk around the house. It's very strange. I mean, it's only turning, but it does. It turns to look at you. Okay. Well, you got my hopes up. Now I'm thinking, oh, big deal. It's just some marketing.
No, this is exciting, right? Like what he's saying is we may be surprised at exactly how Apple rolls out. This may not be like, oh, yeah, OLED iPads, whatever, that they may not wait till June to start really aggressively telling the AI story. And that would be an interesting choice if they do that.
And we have to remember that they made a huge deal about the pen. Like, it is like not like the Apple doesn't put that in the graphic if they're just updating the screens. And right. So there's a lot of rumors around haptic pens. And I got to tell you that there's a lot of artists that would get really excited about being able to simulate surfaces, being able to, be able to potentially model. I mean, the kinds of things that are possible, and we don't know what they're going to actually do, is the ability for things like ZBrush or other things like that to be able to, for you to be able to feel like you're pushing into a 3D object while painting on it. Feeling like you have different surfaces, feeling like the pen is the thing that has me the most interested. If the pen is not that interesting, there's nothing else in the announcements that I've seen so far that would get me to buy a new iPad Pro. I've got two of them from the last couple of years. I don't need another one. if the pen is really something that is revolutionary from an artist's perspective, from my perspective, I'm super interested, and I'll have to figure out how to come up with the money to buy
it.
In
luck.
If it's not, I'm like, eh.
Because their social media posts say, like this one does, we're drafting up something special for you, right? That very much implies that it's about the pen.
Yeah, I think that this is, the pen is going to be a big push for it. And I think they're going to do some stuff that's really hard, like with the pen, that is hard for other people to do well. That's what Apple likes to do. If they're not promoting this, if they're going to do something that anybody else could do, everyone else is drawing on glass. If Apple makes it feel like you're drawing on paper, you're drawing on a surface, you're drawing on all these other things, it's not a general, it may not be a general purpose thing, but I think a lot of people, I know that I have an iPad. I have one iPad with that paper surface on it. I do all my drawing on that iPad because of the way the surface feels, and I think it's an important piece of the puzzle.
So I think one of the things that is worth thinking about is that last year Apple released the only iPad related thing that Apple released last year was that USB-C Apple Pencil.
Yeah.
But what it means is they now have a modern, fully featured, more or less fully featured Apple Pencil that is at the lower price point. They could get rid of the old Apple Pencil. They could get rid of the second generation Apple Pencil, and they could introduce an Apple Pencil Pro, essentially, with all sorts of fancy features, like what Alex is talking about, because they also had that other pencil, which up to now it's been like there's just one pencil, and it makes it hard. You can't load it up with tech if you want lots of people to buy it. But if you have two models and one's more affordable and one is more fancy, that's very Apple. So that rings true to me.
So maybe the event's going to be about a fancy pencil more than anything else.
Well, iPad events are all about accessories, right? I mean, in some ways, the defining characteristic of the iPad is that it's just sort of a naked tablet, and then it's what you put around it. There are lots of rumors that there's going to be a new Magic Keyboard design. Remember that shipped in 2020? So it's been 4 years since the Magic Keyboard came out, and that it's going to be more laptop-like. And that'll be interesting, right? How do you ergonomically attach an iPad to a separate keyboard and have that work and be more laptop-like? And then the pencil will be another accessory that takes the iPad in a different direction. I know that iPad, OLED and chips and who knows what else will be on there, but fundamentally, iPad generations, I think, are defined by their accessories as much as anything else. So I'm also excited about the keyboard and the pencil. Yeah.
So is our Discord. John Gerard says Apple has to have different tips, not just software to simulate. Shay says, would love a pen that worked on the iPhone. The Little Fokker says, pen works with AVP, the Vision Pro. Flying Comic says, a speaker on the pen so it could squeak when you write on glass. John Gerard, now we're getting wild. John Gerard says, maybe an actual brush tip that looks and feels like a paintbrush.
And these tips have been those types of tips. And remember, the tip has been easy to remove and put on, even though none of us have ever needed to do that for a long time. And other tips have been rumored forever, so... So I think that it's definitely possible.
And the rumor here is that I think there was at one point that they were going to do a magnetically connected tip system that they were going to have, and they're going to lean into it more than just you can replace the nub when it wears down with, you can have different kinds. And
had a nub wear down?
Yeah.
Have you actually had
No, never,
down?
Never. I'm still using the original.
I'm surprised that you're not, Alex, because you're using that sandpaper screen cover that it's not wearing it down.
Yeah, I don't. I haven't really had any trouble with the nubs for any period of time. But I will say it's not.
You can buy new ones, right?
All day, every day. You can buy new ones. And they all come with one extra. And I've got a little collection of them. I always have to figure out, like,
that's the first thing I
come across them going, oh, I should make sure I don't lose these. I've never used
them. Pandaworks Revision Pro is funny because there are some rumors that there's going to be some real actual, like, accelerometers in the new pencil as well. And as wild as that is, it's not impossible that they might have a Vision Pro application. Although the thing that I keep thinking would be the most ridiculous thing is, right, the Vision Pro doesn't come with hand controls like the Meta Quest does. I thought, oh no, I hope Apple's solution to gaming on the Vision Pro is not two pencils. Just wave your pencils around, everybody. Oh,
well, that is one thing people are, I mean, look, I'm always looking for negative about Vision Pro. You know me. But one thing people do seem to say is that Meta wasn't such a bad idea to have controllers, and that all of this gets a little,
they're way more precise.
It's a little tedious after a while to be doing the thing with your fingers all the time.
I find that it doesn't, I will say that my, with the lenses in, you know, I find that the accuracy is not as good. Like, so maybe it's because my prescription is so bad. Is that I find that there's a little bit more of me having to work at it. When I wear my contacts and I take the lenses out, I find that it works better, you know. Yeah. So it is a little bit, it's a minor thing.
Right.
But also, I do think that the pen, being able to like look at a surface and then draw with the pen and potentially, you know, while I'm in the Apple Vision Pro would be definitely compelling. And one of the things with like Jig Space, is you can actually, right now, you can just pinch and go around, but you could theoretically do that with a pen in 3D, being able to draw. There's a lot of opportunities there.
On a purely logistical basis, this is a 7 a.m. video release. This is not an event in that sense. And Jason, did you get an invitation to go down to Cupertino to touch something?
No, I did not get invited to Cupertino to touch something.
So they're working
on stuff, though. I think there is a, you know, there's a broader plan for this, but it feels to me like it's going to be more like think of that laptop announcement last fall, right? Where they did some stuff and they had like creators in New York at some sort of event and all of that. And like, and there were press briefings and there were press, you know, there were review embargoes for the next week and all that. It would not surprise me if it's sort of that level. It's the ABC of modern Apple, right? Which is, there's the physical event, which is just WWDC and iPhone. There's the video event with a lot of assorted kind of ancillary stuff, but not a big public physical event. That's maybe this one and definitely that laptop. And then there's just the press release that they put out. So this is a mid-tier event.
I think that they did say they're going to have a London or some EU.
I saw that story.
Yeah. Gathering at the same time. So are you going to do a office hour? What you do usually with office hours?
I think what we're going to do. Well, in the past we've done it in after hours, but I think we're going to, because it coincides perfectly with our show.
Time. Yeah.
I think we're going to go ahead and just watch it during the show. And so our show will be covering it with a lot of people interacting and so on and so forth, just because it's the same time.
It's before my traditional hour of rising. However, I was talking on Sunday to Micah and he said, I really want to cover it. So I think we may actually, I might be in my jammies at home. I think we're going to actually do the same thing. We'll cover it.
Yeah,
because you know what, I believe, and I believe there will be a really interesting AI.
I think there's something interesting.
I am an AI true believer. I've converted. My religion has changed, and I'm now a believer, having used it very effectively in a number of things in my life. And I would love to see what Apple can do with it. It wouldn't necessarily be like a ChatGPT thing. It would be more like,
again, I think being able to just a private interrogation of the stuff that I have on my computer or on my device would be
nice.
A pretty big deal. Like, just like I emailed Leo 6 months ago about this subject, or
everything
roughly 6 months ago about the subject.
Yeah.
Let me know what was that? That is, I mean, that'd be life changing for me.
Like, Google just does that them, you know, a little bit with Gemini. So if you have Gemini Advanced, you can, in the settings, in their, you know, extensions section, connect it to your workspace, which means Gmail, your Drive, and your Docs. So That is an interesting turn thing that you could turn on.
And I admit that I'm a little resistant to doing that in the cloud and having something exterior. Yeah. Like, I think that's Apple's advantage.
Right.
This is all in sitting on my computer. Or I you know, Adobe now is allowing you, they just put out a subscription now for $4.99 that you can, you know, use AI to look at your PDFs, right? For Acrobat. There's an Acrobat AI subscription. I could see Apple doing something like that, where if I open up if I'm in, you know, books or whatever I want to open it in, I open up a PDF and it's 192 pages. Tell me where, and just start asking questions that are against that document. I think that's also very powerful, you know, and I think that that's going to be where a lot of people are interested. I think that local support inside the hardware without it feeling like you're publishing that to the cloud, because I think Apple's probably more sensitive to that than anybody else. And for a lot of companies, that becomes really interesting, is like, this isn't a cloud solution, this on-prem solution of on the computer or inside the organization, being able to do lots of those types of things, I think is a big change from what we're seeing from most other organizations. There's other people that are doing it on-prem, but it takes a little bit of geekiness. And if Apple just puts this into the devices and you don't have to think about it, and it'll just do all those things for you, you know, what Apple's good at is making things easy to use, that, you know, and of course they'll call it something else. You know, so it'll have a different name and it'll be easy.
I'm skeptical that the iPad event won't be like a little bit of a priming the pump for WWDC. So the iPad, I mean, my best guess,
I still think it's going to be a lot. There's a lot of pencil there. They put a pencil in the invite. Like, it's like usually is much more, they're not usually on the nose to that level. Like, so, you know, it's going to be a lot.
Oh, yeah. No, it very clearly. I mean, they've done that. There was a previous event they did with an iPad and the pencil where they had like sketches and things. And it was very clear what they're going for there. And that's why I think that'll be the primary thing. If Mark Gurman is right and the AI is going to be part of this, I think, again, part of it is just storytelling. It's marketing. It's what they say, like, about the iPad, some version of what they said about the MacBook Air. If there are AI software features to be had, I would expect that they will be minimal but interesting. And like I said, it's the kind of thing where, like, what if they have an LLM guidance mode in, that they put in Pages or something, right? Or what if they have
playing catch up to. And a very weak sauce catch up to Microsoft.
But it's the start, right? Because are they going to unveil their entire AI strategy in an iPad event 1 month before WWDC, which is their huge event? It seems unlikely. It's not impossible, right? They could choose to do that if they wanted to. It seems unlikely to me. So my guess is that they're going to show some stuff off and say, and we've got way more that you're going to see next month. Well, they'll ship a couple of things.
They're in a different position than the other companies because their user base is moving at a much slower pace. I still have access to all the Google tools. I have ChatGPT. I have access to the Microsoft tools if I want them. I have access to the Google tools if I want them on a Mac. I'm not sitting there going, oh my gosh, I can't believe when Apple will do this. I mean, it can take a long time for it to be embedded into the Apple system before I would even notice, you know? Right. And so the thing is, I don't think Apple has to panic, because when your software, people might go, oh, well, I'm not going to use that software, I'm going to use this software. And there might be a move back and forth, but Apple users are using hardware and they're, you know, they're pretty attached to their hardware for the most part. And so the chances, you know, Apple has a much longer runway than almost everybody else, as far as how the decision process people are going to make. Because again, all these tools are still, it's not like I'm sitting on the outside and I can't use them if I have a Mac. I'm using ChatGPT on my Mac and on my phone and on my iPad all the time, you know? And so I don't, you know, and I can use Gemini on my Mac and I can use, you know, a Copilot on my Mac. So I don't think there's this feeling of loss that people have related to that. And as a result, I think that Apple's got a pretty long runway. I don't think they're panicking or under any kind of incredible pressure. They're definitely moving forward, but I think that they've seen this for a while and they've been working on it. I mean, working on it for a while.
To your point, Apple last week we heard is not only talking to OpenAI Google about Gemini, but they're also talking to OpenAI about their AI. It sounds like at least part of Apple's strategy is, hey, we're not going to worry about AI safety and all the bad PR we could get from it. We're just going to let Google and Microsoft
and in the same way,
plus they'll give us money to do it.
And Siri will tell you that I found this on the web for you. Like, that's her way of saying I'm not accountable for what I'm giving you.
Yeah, but
like,
it also so is the number one joke about Siri. I mean, it's also the failure of Siri from our point of view.
Well,
right?
Think about the layered model approach too, where they could use external models for certain kinds of queries and say, you know, for this one, maybe it's for generative. They say, right. Okay, well, you know, you can ask a model, you can set your default model.
Yeah, I use
all of that. And that'll be
that.
A possibility.
Yeah.
Right. Like, so they may do that. And the other thing is, you know, their on-device model might have some checking of its own, right? Their on-device model might be saying, asking some other model to do something and getting it back and going, I don't know what I think about this one. That's also possible. But I do agree. I think Apple is going to farm a lot of stuff out to other third-party models and maybe even let you choose which ones you want to use, which is fine.
And I should also point out there's this guy named Jason Snell who wrote this article for Macworld in which he says Apple's AI push may sell a lot of hardware.
Okay, well, I mean, yeah, right? Like this idea. Yeah. Okay, so Apple gets a lot of, there's a lot of talk about Apple being like, oh, Apple always is trying to come up with a new way to sell us something. It's like, yeah, they make hardware. They make their money on hardware, software and services, but the hardware is a huge driver of it. And while they can put in a new camera every year in the iPhone and push things a little bit, nothing pushes hardware sales more than a software environment where there's a big leap that requires a lot of hardware, you know, effort, a lot of power in the new hardware in order to get some new effect. So if Apple builds AI features right, and they require the more GPU, the better, the more neural engine cores, the better. There is, I just had that moment where I realized, oh yeah, if they introduce a whole bunch of on-device stuff and it works best, or it's gated by like, you've got to have an iPhone 15 Pro or better, let's say, like if it's truly stuff that people want, they're going to sell a lot of phones. You know, they're going to make people upgrade sooner rather than later.
You know whose strategy that is? That's Microsoft's strategy. And that's why Qualcomm is announcing these AI chips and Microsoft's making a big deal about their new AI PCs, which have an AI key on the keyboard, a Copilot key on the keyboard. None of that's necessary. It's all about selling more products, and that's something Microsoft needs to do.
In the end, yeah, and you can do it artificially, but it's better if there's a natural fit where there is a new technology that came out that people want for some reason. And that's the struggle with AI is AI is not a product. It is a feature. You need to build AI that does something people want, that does something the masses want. But we all feel like that's probably going to happen. And if you do that and it requires more hardware, that's perfect, because then you can go out without a whole lot of effort and just say, oh, well, you need to upgrade your Mac or iPad or iPhone to the latest, because this new feature that everybody loves, it's kind of slow on that M1 MacBook Air of yours, but on the M4, it flies, right? And they will sell. That is how you kick off a hardware upgrade cycle, which is where Apple makes most of its money. And so AI has a lot of potential, but like, let's not lose sight of the fact that AI, especially on-device AI, it has huge RAM issues and huge GPU or neural core issues, where the more the better for all of that stuff. Guess what? That is going to help Apple sell a lot of new systems if they do it right.
Yeah, with a lot more RAM. And you're going to wish you had bought more RAM. All right, we're going to take a little break and see if we can get the library online. We're working on Andy. I'd like to get him in to talk about this as well. But first, a word from our sponsor, Wix Studio. They've given me 60 seconds. That's all to tell you about Wix Studio, the web platform for agencies and enterprises. So here are a few things you could do from start to finish in a minute or less on Studio. Adapt your designs for every device with responsive AI. Expand Wix Studio's pre-made solutions with back-end and front-end APIs. Generate code and troubleshoot bugs with a built-in AI code assistant. Switch up the styling of hundreds of web pages. I'm talking fonts, layouts, colors, all with a click. Add no-code animations and gradient backgrounds right in the editor. Start a design library. Package your code and UI in reusable full-stack apps. Oh, and one more big one. Deliver everything your client needs in one smooth handover. Time's up, but the list keeps on going. Take a look. It is incredible. I was blown away. Wix.com/Studio. Step into Wix Studio and see for yourself. Go to wix.com/studio. We also have a link in our show notes. You can find it there. And I don't mention this enough, but there's a sponsor page at twit.tv. So go to twit.tv/sponsors and click the link there. That works too. Wix.com/studio. Thank you, Wix. All right. Thank you, Burke, who has massaged Andy Inako, rubbed him with unguents and exotic oils, and produced a library-based Andy Inako. Is he there?
I am here.
Ah, all right. Hello, Andy.
I'm feeling very mellow, although I was pretty angry at a bunch of Apple decisions that were made about this hardware 5 to 8 years ago, but I'm doing much better now. Thank you.
Yes. Do you, Jason Snell, ever try to stream with the iPad? Can you do a show from the iPad?
You can do it. You can't really record it is the biggest problem.
Well, that's right? Okay. Andy doesn't have to record it. Yeah.
I did test it out and it seemed to work with like a Zoom chat I did with a friend 2 days ago, but for some reason it just wanted nothing to do with my microphone anymore.
Yeah. It's weird.
Nothing to do with the camera anymore. And because Zoom doesn't have the ability to say, hi, I would like, excuse me, because the iPad does not have the ability to say, hi, I would like Zoom to use this as my headphone. As my microphone and this as
yeah. I like the MacBook anyway, sorry about, as far sorry as I'm that. Concerned.
this is why I travel with an Air again is that the iPad, like the Apple's support for external devices on iPad is still poor.
Yeah.
I won't try that again. I'll have a MacBook.
I can pretty much guess that is not something they're going to announce 1 week from today. Suddenly, it'll work better with a microphone.
That's when they'll get you.
Yeah.
Suddenly.
I don't think they're going to apologize to me either. I'm holding on.
No, I wouldn't hold out for that either. Yeah. I'm excited. I guess Micah and I will stream it, right? John Slanina says he's going to get up at 7 a.m. Well, you have to get up earlier than that. And we will. Yeah. You're good. I appreciate that, John. Thank you. And I will be in my jammies at home streaming, not from an iPad. But you know what? I'm ready. I've loosened the wallet. A moth flew out, but I've loosened the wallet, hoping that there would be like OLED is almost enough. But you know what? I'm looking at my iPad Pro 12.9 inch that I use very rarely. In fact, mostly just to Zoom my mom and thinking, do I need another iPad? This one's not obsolete. And I think that's part of the thing that Apple has to face. One month later, there will be WWDC, and I think Apple's AI strategy will be laid out by then. Yes?
Should be. Hope so.
Yeah. They'll say enough to get by. They don't need to put up. They don't need to have the whole plan right now.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I guess it's hard. You know, you're absolutely right, obviously. And Apple's never been the leading edge or bleeding edge of anything, but it's also got to be hard to sit on your hands while such an accelerated process is happening with AI. This is the fastest tech adoption ever, I think.
Oh, now Apple knows how the Android team at Google felt.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like, okay, it turns out we bet on the wrong horse. As a matter of fact, it wasn't even a horse. It was a duck with a saddle.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll move forward.
So Bloomberg also talks about the Apple conversations with OpenAI, as well as Google. It says, according to Bloomberg, is this Mark again? Yeah. Negotiations center on powering AI chatbot. In iOS 18 updates, would anybody mourn the demise of Siri?
I don't think Siri is going to go away. I think this is just going to be another service that's available to it.
That's risky. You know, Samsung did that with Bix. And so you had a Google Voice search and you had Bix. And it really
I think search and Siri are very different. I mean, the number one I don't know what other people use the Siri for. But the number one use of Siri in my household is asking for directions and setting timers.
Yeah.
You know,
and that's what Amazon reported with Amazon Echo.
To play.
Yeah. That's so
the vast majority. So what I'm saying is that Siri is something that is this low level. I just want my hardware to do something that is fairly repeatable. Now, what you do outside of that, Siri may have, there may be a lot of other things, but I don't necessarily even want Apple to get rid of that low-level functionality to hand it off to AI because I don't know what AI is going to do with it. I don't, you know, it may hallucinate. It may do a lot of things. But right now, the bare to the metal, play me this song. What time? When is sunrise? I set another timer. Tell me how to get to here. Those all those things with Siri work pretty well, and that's what we use it a lot for, you know, and so, I mean, like every day, all day, like it's so I think that Siri at that low level, as far as tell me something about something, then we shift to ChatGPT. And that's where some of the conversational stuff could get a little bit better. But I don't think it's an either or. I think it's a this and.
Well, I think that Siri is way too valuable a trademark for them to abandon it. And I think that it's very, very ripe for enhancement with advanced AI. The difficulty is going to be is like what a lot of people like myself on Android have discovered when suddenly the Google Assistant that works really, really great, does all kinds of really great things, and I know how to ask it the things that I want it to do, get it to do the things I want it to do, is suddenly Gemini with a system with Gemini. And now like something simple like turning on or off the lights takes a long pause while the two different voice assistants decide who gets it. Or in the early days before they fix a lot of stuff, like, oh, I'm really bad at doing this. I'm Gemini. I'm really bad at doing this, but I'll do that instead of the assistant. No. Don't take me to a web page that finds like a JavaScript timer. Set an actual timer using the actual clock app. So, but I really think they could give Siri its debutante ball. It's coming out as confirmation by doing it that way.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is where they're not going to throw Siri away. I know people, especially in our sphere, are like, oh, everybody hates Siri. It's like, you know, people use Siri. It's fine. It's a brand that's known, and that's the most important thing. So I think it'll be, you know, Siri AI or Siri AI features within Siri. And if they do it right, the stuff that Andy describes, that's what you need to avoid, right? Is it needs to feel like a responsive on-device model that can go out and, you know, or ask the LLM or ask a remote LLM or whatever it needs to do, but still be just your voice assistant that, you know, that you don't have to. I mean, like it should be that basic. It should literally be, I'm talking to this thing and it's smarter than it used to be. That's it.
It'll be very interesting to see how Apple handles this. I'm sure this is a fun challenge for their marketing team and their engineers. yeah. Because, you know, do you really want to say, hey, Shlomo, ask AI for something? You don't want to do that. You want it. And I don't think you want two different assistants. I really think Bixby was a bad experience for Samsung. I think we know that's not going to fly. So you got to take Shlomo and make her something better.
I just don't know if you do.
You don't
I still know. I don't know. I mean, again, I use, you know, my family uses Siri all the time and has no feeling of just knows where the border is of what to ask for and doesn't. I don't think that Siri has to do any more than that. I think you could have a whole nother feature set that you double tap or do whatever or open up. I mean, people are already talking to their ChatGPT as it is and asking questions and having it talk back to them. So it's, I don't know if, because we, and again, I have a family that uses ChatGPT, all of them use ChatGPT most of the day, you know, like, you know, and my wife gets, you know, has recipes done. I, you know, she's asking ChatGPT stuff all the time. My kids are, you know, of course, exploring ideas and so on and so forth with it. I use it all day. And I don't feel like, I guess I'm actually, as a user of both ChatGPT and Siri, concerned of any attempt to merge those two things together. Like, I just think that the confusion and process of who to talk to about what, in, you know, I think that for a lot of Apple users, and again, I'm only using my family as you know, anecdotally, but from my experiences, is looking at my wider family as well as my nuclear family, is that no one's complaining about Siri not being able to do certain things. Like they're just not thinking of an average Apple user, not a techie Apple user, but an average Apple user uses Siri for a lot of, you know, basic requests and things that they need. And I don't, and it works fairly well inside of that area. I think a lot of techie people are trying to get it to do a bunch of other things and are frustrated about it and everything else. But I don't know if I think that, again, 90% of the Apple users probably are Siri's working exactly the way they expect it to. I don't think they're not clamoring for something new.
Oh, you're not with me when Lisa and I ask her to do something and swear up a blue streak for about half an hour. Lisa yells at her. She says, F you. But not that Siri's worse than Amazon or Google's assistant. We yell at them all kind of equally. Well, no, maybe we yell at Siri a little bit more.
I think you're unusual, Alex.
I think most people think Siri's an idiot and don't like it.
I don't know. I mean, I know a lot of people say, hey, Siri. I don't. Here's the funny thing. I use Siri only in my kitchen. And the reason I do that is because I have so many Apple devices in my office that if I say, hey, Shlomo, I don't know what device is going to respond. So the only time I use Siri is if I use it in my car and in my kitchen when I'm outside of my office, because the number one problem I have with Siri is not what it responds with. It is which device will respond, you know? And so that's the constant problem I have with Siri is that I don't know which one's going to respond. I've got two iPads here. I've got six Macs. I've got a couple phones. They're all sitting here and they all light up and go, okay, what am I watch? You know, like they're all lighting up and say, what do I?
Here's
you know,
what the Discord the I says. I personally think Siri's the worst tech Apple has released in 15 years. Average iPhone users don't use Siri because it's so terrible. I'm truly embarrassed by Siri. I have better results with almost every other ST speech to text technology. Everyone I know doesn't use Siri because it's terrible. Siri is an idiot for most things.
Well, I don't think our listenership is necessarily an average user.
I think the average user Apple doesn't products. Even think about it. I think Apple's got a massive problem with Siri. And one of the reasons Apple looks laggard with AI is because Siri's so awful. Honestly.
Yep. But the thing is, I'll say the flip side is everybody knows what Siri is.
That's true.
In fact, it's become common.
They don't know Cortana.
Like a cliche. People say, so like, there'll be a baseball highlight of somebody failing to catch a fly ball. And the announcer will say something like, hey Siri, how do you catch a fly ball? Right? Like it's in the vernacular is like, that's what you say when you're talking to a robot. The fact
right?
is you can't buy that. You can't buy that. And I know that it's bad. It started out as being groundbreaking. It has not progressed.
Yeah.
It's very frustrating for everybody who's tried to use it. I was the other weekend, we were trying some stuff with Siri and it gave the right answer. And I was legitimately shocked.
There you go.
So I was like, wait a second. Maybe it's better. But the fact is, people know it. And if Apple updates it to use some of this new technology to make it better and more reliable, then it's a winner. But like, that's what they have to do.
What was the movie?
It's been clear for years.
Where the guy's driving down and he says, hey, Shlomo, call somebody. And it says, dialing your mother. And it says, no, stop. Dialing your mother. It's so well known that it's a joke. You know, that's the flip side of being well known. Edsel was well known as well. This is something Apple has to transcend. And it may be an argument for what you're saying, Alex, that don't use that because we already know that's an idiot.
We just know what its limits are. You know, so this is
well, you do. I think you're different. You're a little different. Your experience is a little different than a lot of
people. I think most people like that when you talk to someone who doesn't know how to do something, you stop asking them to do those things.
Right.
So I think that's what I'm saying is that a lot of users kind of like, it's good for timers and asking what time it is and asking, you know, how long it'll take to get somewhere.
I don't even use it for timers. I use Alexa for timers or Google.
That's
the big difference. We keep talking about what a tactical advantage it is to be the pre-installed thing when you're trying to compete with anybody else. Shlomo is the pre-installed thing. It's the thing that's in all of Apple's advertising. And so people start using it if it starts being good, I think.
We're going to take a little break. When we come back, we will talk about some other things. I had a list, but I forgot. Hey, what are we going to talk about next? Our show today is brought to you by Ecamm. This is a product that works and we love. The leading live streaming video production studio built for Mac. I've said it many times. Had we had Ecamm when we started Twit 19 years ago, I probably wouldn't have bought all this equipment. I would have just done the show at home with Ecamm. It does everything we do with much more expensive gear. Whether you're a beginner or an expert, Ecamm is here to elevate your video production. At a price, you know, anybody can afford. It really is democratizing streaming. Ecamm Live includes support for multiple cameras, for screen sharing. Their live camera switcher lets you direct your show in real time, just like we do here in the studio. You can add logos, titles, lower thirds, and graphics. You can share your screen. You can drop in video clips. You can bring on interview guests. You can use a green screen, and it does green screen right. It really looks nice. Micah uses it. Everybody here uses it. Remember the day the studio went dark because the power went out? I went home and finished the show with Ecamm Live. They've just announced a new thing that I've been begging them for forever. Ecamm for Zoom just went into public beta testing a few days ago. You can now automatically send Ecamm Live's audio and video output into a Zoom meeting, into a Zoom webinar, or a Zoom event. You can create individual participant audio and video recordings. We call them ISOs in the trade during a live stream or recording. Those are fantastic. You can add Zoom chat messages to your meeting broadcast recording as text overlays, which is really cool, and a whole lot more. Brand new in beta, but you can try it at ecamm.com/zoom, ecamm.com/zoom. Join the thousands of worldwide entrepreneurs, marketing professionals, podcasters, educators, musicians, and other Mac users who rely on Ecamm Live every single day. Get 1 month free when you subscribe to any of Ecamm's plans. Here's how you do it. Go to ecamm.com/twit and use the promo code TWIT at checkout. ecamm.com/twit. Thank you, Ecamm, for supporting Mac Break Weekly. Now, did any of you on Friday night get your Apple IDs reset overnight? Didn't happen to anybody I know. And yet, social media was alive with it. People locked out from their accounts. According to 9 to 5 Mac, even a few of its staff members had it happen. One person was in the middle of a FaceTime call when all of a sudden, boom, you're out. That's not nice.
That could be relationship changing if it happens during a tense moment in a very important conversation.
Did you hang up on me? No, Siri did it. Apple, one Mastodon user said, this is from The Verge, that an Apple support team member said, told them, quote, sometimes random security improvements are added to your account. Mass password changes, app-specific passwords broken. Some people not forced with a password reset, some just suggested. We love Michael Tsai. He's a guy who wrote SpamSieve and is a really great developer, but I think his blog is a must read, mjtsai.com. He also had it happen to him. Have we heard what was going on?
Apple has made no statements about this at all, which is weird.
Tsai says unlocking the account would require a 1 hour security delay because he had his stolen device protection turned on and he wasn't at
home. This happened to Mike Hurley, who I do the Upgrade podcast with, and he was traveling for the weekend, so he was outside of his home and therefore also had the Apple device security protection turned on, and he had to wait. But although it turns out he could go to his Mac, which didn't have it on, and fix it there, and that's what he ended up doing. But this does what's weird is Apple hasn't communicated what's going on, which makes me suspicious that they felt that they had like an incursion or something that they were dealing with. And it's a security measure that they don't want to disclose.
Yes.
But even still, you should probably say something to your customers somewhere that says, here's what's going on, at least in vague terms. And they've been silent about it.
And there doesn't seem to be any commonality. It wasn't just people with stolen device protection turned on. It wasn't just people in a particular geographic location, right? Mike's in London or England, right? You know what though? And this is where Apple really gets a pass. If they did it on, they must've had a good reason. That's always what I think.
I really feel like there's a security thing here that they don't want to talk about until they've gotten to the bottom of it. Like, you know, and I think that there's something, you know, they were able to see something and they're not going to give anybody any information until they fix it. I have no idea if that's the case or not. I mean, I'm, you know, guessing, but it seems really odd that that this would happen without them at least acknowledging that there was a problem. For Apple to be so quiet and then just to quietly tell everybody to do this seems like they wanted to sneak up on a problem.
You know, also seems like they had a red alert go off where they're like, we're unsure about something. Let's just lock all the accounts that might have been affected and make them reset because something might have been in progress. Something might have been, you know, I don't know. Again, how
it may not have been them. It may have been like they see that this is being hit because these providers have now those emails are in the wind. Or something's been lost in the wind, by another provider, And we're simply going to close that down. And they might have seen an uptick of usage of those emails and stuff like that. They're going to have all that data and just decided to close it all down.
Yeah, there's a lot of potential signals, right? There's signals of other accounts. There's signals of incursions into specific servers, maybe certain kinds of accounts. We don't know. Like, there's so many different things it could be, but I bet they have a security team. And again, I think this is the most reasonable scenario, is they have a security team, they flagged something. And because I think Apple does legitimately care a great deal about the security of their users, I think they did one of those preemptive, let's just lock it because that will stop this from happening, whatever it is. And that they're not disclosing, perhaps because they don't understand what went on, or it's still ongoing. Yeah. It is possible that they just had a screw up somewhere. But I feel like if they had a screw up somewhere, they probably would have just said, we apologize. Yeah. We had a screw up. And that's the silence. Yeah. The longer the silence goes, the more I believe that this was a security thing that may be ongoing, in fact.
Exactly.
But that's very much like characteristic of Apple. Like, the default position of Apple is that, why would we tell you anything? Why would we like explain ourselves?
Yes.
So I don't mean that in a mean-spirited way. I mean that just simply as the characteristic of the thing. So as a result, like, when something like this happens and Apple doesn't make a comment, to me, it almost doesn't seem particularly suspicious as it would with another company that has a policy of saying, hi, we are aware of the blah, blah, blah. We have not identified the source of the problem yet. We anticipate it be fixed by blah, blah, blah. We will have, here's a web page that we've set up on a different server so that you could check for updates. Whereas with Apple, it's like, yeah, we might find out. We might never find out. What I don't anticipate is them apologizing.
Yeah. So we knew this was going on. We've known it was going on for a few years. AT&T, T-Mobile, Verizon, Sprint, all sharing your location data with strangers. The FCC has now fined each of them a combined total of $200 million for illegally sharing customers' location data to, quote, aggregators, who then resold the access information to third-party location-based service providers. It all came to a head, believe it or not, 3 years ago with Joseph Cox's article in the defunct, now defunct Motherboard, in which he said, I gave a bounty hunter $300, then he located our phone. Remember this? We talked about it. Took the FCC 3 years to do, actually more than that. This was January 2019.
Yeah.
Five years.
it goes a little bit further back than that. Like, the real genesis of this was incidents in 2015, 16, 17, when a deputy sheriff, who then became sheriff of Missouri town, was filing false paperwork to get access to a police-only location database and basically keeping tabs on his workers, on people in the state police, on friends, whatever. And he wound up spending like 6 months in jail. This started off like a long series of investigations about it's not illegal for AT&T at all to sell this information, but they are supposed to, their only responsibility they have is to basically take responsible amount of care in making sure that whoever you sell it to protects it and keeps it safe. And the fine was based on, you did not protect and keep that data safe, which is kind of chilling, because you would like the problem to be, hey, you're not supposed to sell this data to anybody under any circumstances or any time.
The T-Mobile got the largest fine, $80 million. Sprint, which merged with T-Mobile, gets a $12 million fine. AT&T, $57 million. Verizon, $47 million. AT&T's response is, that's unfair. It's not, boy, you guys suck. Alex Byers of the AT&T behemoth, we call it the Death Star, says the FCC's action lacks both the legal and factual merit. It unfairly holds us responsible for another company's violation of our contractual requirements to obtain consent, ignores the immediate steps we took to address the company's failures, and perversely punishes us for supporting life-saving location services like emergency medical alerts and roadside assistance that the FCC itself previously encouraged. So AT&T's position is, look, we share it with people for emergency medical alerts and roadside assistance. It was their responsibility to tell AT&T customers, oh, incidentally, we're going to sell that information on. It was it all to these kind of reasonable people, or was it just, I mean, I don't know if I believe AT&T. This is the same company who lost control of, I don't know how many billions of records, and has kind of consistently said, well, it was somebody else's fault. They like to blame other people.
We should clarify. This isn't about like your browsing history or anything like that. It's about the data that the location. Company has to collect.
The
company, like your address, your billing information, your phone number, stuff like that.
You're talking about the AT&T breach. Yes. This is separate.
I'm talking about the penalties, I think. And the
penalties are for location information.
Right. Exactly. Which is, again, part of the package of information that these carriers have to keep in order to basically run the business and actually apply stuff. We're not talking about stuff like what a data broker would, what YouTube does, what Instagram does, like tracking your interests and selling it on. It really does show what a dog's dinner, like American privacy laws are. I mean, it's just non-existent.
It's a nightmare.
As a matter of fact, just today on GBH, on NPR, I was talking about the new national privacy law second swing that Congress put into draft legislation, and they had their first committee meeting about it a couple weeks ago. And it would make these things kind of unambiguously wrong. AT&T is saying, hey, look, we are not the ones who violated the terms of use of this data. It was this company we sold it to. Under the terms of this law, said no, you are responsible. You're basically responsible down the line for what happens to the data that you collect, and it's just astounding. And also, you realize that we're only seeing this fine right now because finally, there's no longer a 2-2 deadlock along party lines in the FCC.
That's what took so long. Really, yeah.
The FCC decided on this fine, I think, in
2020.
Exactly. And it's only like since October when they finally when the Senate finally deigned to allow Biden's appointee to actually assume the role as commissioner.
That's a good point.
That would actually get things done.
Shouldn't really blame the FCC for the 5-year delay. They were essentially blocked from that. And I wouldn't be surprised if it was telecom lobbyists who said, hey, you know, if you could just keep that deadlock going for another couple of years.
Well, and again, I think that this is what, you know, Apple's slowly tying a noose around. They don't have it all done yet, but you can see them slowly obscuring their user data away from everybody else because it protects. And again, there's a certain group of people that are buying Apple devices because it is.
Yeah, but
Apple
if you have an iPhone,
tying those off.
You're probably using one of those three big carriers, and they have that information. Apple
they
does
have
not keep
rougher,
that location information from them.
They have what they have. Internally to them, I believe, is that your position from the cell site. The actual GPS data, I believe, is something that Apple has. Like it may not be obscuring it from them yet, but it could, you know. And so the thing is that what they have is, and it's not that bad, but it's definitely not nearly as precise as the GPS data that the phone has, or the very precise data that your Wi-Fi gives, or the ultra precise data that your ultra wideband, you know. So ultra wideband, for instance, which is not being used very heavily, and something Apple has, is 6 to 10 inches, you know. So it's a very, very precise thing, and again, not used widely yet, but I think that it will be fairly restrictive of how Apple allows that to be used as they go forward. But what the cell companies are doing is triangulating your rough position plus or minus usually hundreds of feet, maybe tens of feet, based on your signal strength to the towers.
Okay. I'll take your word for it that's not shared. I would bet it is shared.
No, that can be
like
shared.
Emergency.
They can't. No, they have that data. The cell carriers have. There's no way to. That's what they have. What they get unrestricted.
So when you call 911.
When you call 911
locations automatically
because it's provided by the software, but AT&T doesn't have the GPS data. What AT&T has is your varying strength to the cell tower, you know, and then the device that has GPS, that GPS is sitting there. That may be delivered to 911. It may be delivered to AT&T. But what AT&T has that it absolutely has all the time that it couldn't lose is where you are in relationship to the cell towers. And it, now it obviously improves its service to have your GPS location. So it's being delivered back to it. And that's why it's, this is being problematic. I'm not saying that it's not being delivered to them right now. I'm saying that it could be cut off. You know, it could be reduced, or it could be, basically, hidden in a more, you know, like giving them less data. But right now it's most likely being delivered back to them as a service from the app.
Right. Let's take a little break. More to come with Mac Break Weekly. Andy Iannocco, glad we got you at the Boston Public Library. You were on GBH this morning. That's why you're in Boston.
Yeah, at the GBH studios.
Nice. And that's one of the things you talked about, which I like, privacy.
Yep.
Very timely. We also have Jason Snell, sixcolors.com, and from officehours.global, Alex Lindsay. Our show today brought to you by Melissa, the data quality expert since 1985. Melissa has helped over 10,000 businesses worldwide harness accurate data with their industry-leading solutions, processing over a trillion addresses, emails, names, and phone records. And they do it worldwide. They're global bureau services, ideal for enterprise businesses looking for trusted data service providers. Melissa will help you clean and verify existing customer records. That's really important. Eliminate duplicate customer records. Nice to have a single customer view. Melissa's uptime is 99.99%, but you can also use it on-prem. They have a SaaS solution. They have a cloud solution. They have an API, really any way you want it. You can add rooftop geocodes. You can add ISO state, country codes, demographics, and more. Melissa's consistently recognized and praised by its users each quarter on G2. In fact, for winter 2024, they were recognized as a small business leader and as easiest setup. With Melissa, you get personalized service from a team with decades of experience. They offer global support with scalable solutions, and they always have a focus on security with secure encryption for all file transfers. It is ISO 27001 compliant, GDPR, HIPAA, HITRUST compliant, SOC 2 compliant. They care about your data security. Get started today with 1,000 records cleaned for free. Melissa.com/twit, M-E-L-I-S-S-A. Melissa.com/twit. Thank you, Melissa, for your longtime support of Twit and of Mac Break Weekly. All right. I'm going to point my microphone now. I'm not going to show you what I'm doing, but tell me if you recognize this sound.
It's Steve Jobs' business card.
It's Steve Jobs' business card. No, it's my titanium Apple card with no number on it, just my name and Goldman Sachs. You got one too? So apparently they wear out. Mine's not worn. Is yours worn out, John? Anybody's worn out? Apple is replacing them, though. I guess maybe this is just they do this kind of thing on a regular basis with other credit cards. Plastic, cheesy credit cards. I didn't realize this. I got an Apple card right away. I've had this now for 6 years, since 2019. So they're starting to send out new cards. And you may have received the email. Apple says, the replacement card will be sent to your billing address on file. Will arrive within 2 weeks from that email. They expire, I guess, in July 2024. So it's hard to know because the card has nothing on it. Not a number, not an expiration date, just my name. I could accidentally hand this out as a business card, and that would be a bad thing. It says you can continue to use your titanium card until it expires or you activate the new one. You can still use the Apple card with Apple Pay and your virtual card number. See, I have yet to pull this card out, ever. And by the way, remember they said don't put it in your wallet? It will stain it. It's been in my wallet for 6 years, and it's completely beautiful.
Hard to believe it's been 6 years.
I know. I find that stunning.
Still feels like the new card.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Signed up in 2019. It's 5 years. 5 years, right? 20. I don't do my math right. 5 years. And I guess it had a 5-year expiration date, I guess. I don't know. But am I have to shred this? Because I don't think I have the equipment.
I think you can take it. They may actually let you return it to
them.
They
were recycling. You're right. Yeah. Apple may also send a prepaid shipping label so you can mail it back for recycling. This is according to Mac Rumors.
Hmm. And you think that maybe there's new technology in the new series of cards? Like there's something that makes it cheaper to operate for Apple?
Yeah, because I don't. Maybe the chip has an expiration built in. I mean, I guess, maybe. But they could. That's just
a
software.
License, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Somebody's saying if I look in my wallet, I can see the expiration date. My card.
I'm not joking at all when I say that I can't wait for iFix or somebody else to do. Now that it's possible to have, like, I don't know what the technology is, but side scan electrochromography or something, where like how they did like the virtual teardown of the Vision Pro. So to compare like what's inside the titanium wafer on the new card versus the old card, and can we figure something out because of that?
It is. Mine expires July 2024. So yeah, it's expiring. I had to look on my phone to find out. I wonder though if that's built in. I don't know. It feels like this is such a nice thing. John Ashley is saying, come on, flick it. You can do that. Anyway, look for your email from Apple and then look for your card in the snail mail. Probably not tied to the expiring Apple IDs. I doubt it. The EU has now said, yes, iPad OS is also affected by the digital, by the what, DM, what do they call it? The Digital Markets Act, the DMA. So you have to open iPad OS to sideloading within 6 months as well. So that'll be interesting, kids. Only in the EU, obviously. Apple has 6 months to ensure full compliance of iPadOS with the DMA obligations.
Honestly, I mean, I know iPadOS got separated from iOS, but they're basically the same operating system. This is interesting in that what they're saying is, look, in terms of the business limits, they think it's already covered well over, and that they expect that iOS or iPadOS will grow and reach the limit shortly. So they're just going to give Apple their 6 month heads up. I imagine this will not be a lot of effort on Apple's part because they are essentially the same operating system and they've done this work. And in fact, I think it might actually improve the lives of iPad users and people in Apple's ecosystem, because right now in the EU, they've got a phone that they can use all sorts of things on theoretically. And then they go to their iPad and none of that stuff is there. It's actually kind of like broken away from the iPad has been broken away from the iPhone. So this will unify those platforms, I think, a little bit more. And that's probably actually a benefit for end users, that that app that you got, if you did at an alternative marketplace, will also be on the iPad.
Yeah, it's a good move for developers too, who might consider putting their apps in third-party marketplaces too, because it would stink if you had an app that was multi-platform by design, but you can sell it as an iPhone app, you can't sell it as an iPad app. That doesn't make any sense.
Epic Games has convinced a U.S. District Court that Apple is not complying with the App Store victory, the single sole victory that Epic had in its lawsuit against Apple, which seemed to resolve last year, but apparently no, continues on.
So now we get to talk about it for the next 2 to 3 years.
Yeah, that's good. We always need more material. This is about anti-steering compliance. So there, that is not a feature of the new Tesla full self-driving 4.0. It is actually... Apple has, they say, has been not doing what they were supposed to do to, what is the anti-steering mandate? Allow Epic Games to say, go to the Epic website to buy Fortnite goodies or something.
Right. It's saying there are other places where you can buy you can this. Buy you don't have to buy it with an in-app purchase. Yeah. And Apple wanted to hide that behind scare dialogues, or they wanted you to have a single link that could go in certain cases, and Epic is saying no, that's not what we agreed to.
There will be a hearing on Wednesday, a week from tomorrow, in the U.S. District Court, and Epic is asking for the court to hold Apple in contempt, to force them to update their policies and to remove all of the new anti-steering provisions. So it's, you know, that's the court agreeing to hear it, not agreeing with Epic.
Yeah, and we're going to keep seeing this every few weeks. There was also, I think developers were also, developers of alternative browsers were also complaining about how, Apple's opened up to third-party browsers. However, we want placement right in the setup to basically set this. We don't want we don't want a situation where there's Safari by default, and then you have the ability to switch to something else later on if you want. We want like first party, equal parties sort of powers during the setup process. So everyone's going to be complaining, saying we don't think that Apple or YouTube or anybody who falls under this act, we don't think they're complying in a way that they should be complying. We have complaints, and please listen to us.
If you're wondering what to do with that old iPad, you could send it to Ukraine for their war effort. Apparently, on these older fighter jets, the Ukraine Air Force is using iPads to control them. This is according to U.S. Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition and Sustainment. Thank you, sir. Dr. William LaPlante. He says tablets like the iPad are being added to older jets to modernize weapons systems. You can still fly the plane. It's the weapons systems that are too modern.
The level of innovation that's going on in Ukraine right now is quite frightening.
Pretty wild.
They're talking about the fact that I was reading something over the weekend that they're talking about the fact that we may actually end up with autonomous drones that are making decisions and executing on those decisions before the end of the war in Ukraine. You know, like that they are,
yeah,
because they're, you know, as they keep on moving forward.
You know why we like these little wars? Because it lets us test out all the new stuff.
Well, yeah. But they're testing it out, and they're not, you know, they're, again,
you don't think we're helping them out?
Survival mode.
Also,
not in those things.
U.S. Undersecretary, the U.S. Undersecretary of Defense for whatever and whatever might disagree. Here's the video of the Ukrainian Air Force Su-27 Flanker Wild Weasel conducting multiple low-level standoff strikes against Russian radars with U.S.-supplied AGM-88 HARMS. Problem is, those AG-88s are kind of modern, more modern than the... So he's got a light pad to control it.
Oh, yeah. No, that's the case. I'm saying with the other stuff, what we prefer to do is give them technology, and not have them develop technology that could propagate.
Yeah.
Like, right. So that's, you know, right. Like, hey, that's part of their negotiation is like, if you don't give us what we need, we'll just keep making it. And, you know, of course, it'll be part of the world after that. So.
I love it that OS Int has an Instagram Reels channel. what a world we live in, isn't it? It's kind of amazing. Really amazing. This is the 831 Tactical Aviation Brigade. You can follow them. If you speak Russian, you can follow them on Instagram. Wow. Andy, did you want to say something or should I move on?
I was just going to quickly say that, like, I think the U.S. military does not want Ukraine or any other company pursuing really cool, clever, and expensive DIY solutions to problems. I think they want them basically get aid free, get stuff from the United States, right, so that Congress can basically pay all of our defense contractors to make really expensive things and new toys to send over there.
And I think it's less about us selling new things and more about if Ukraine comes up with a lot of great things or a lot of good ideas there's going to be almost no control over how those go out. And so the thing is that you end up with lots of small states having lots of things that are really complicated, you know, like, you know, and that innovation is something that Ukraine has proven, because they were already a technology hub when this all started to happen. Their ability to innovate has been, you know, I don't think anybody's ever seen any country with so little resources produce so much innovation in one, you know, one war, you know, and I think that that's a, you know, but that innovation will go everywhere. Like, because what they're doing is very low, inexpensive. This is the
thing when you DJI think about asymmetrical things. Yeah.
When you think about asymmetrical threats, when you have these, when they're building up all these DIY things, these aren't $100,000 missiles that require, you know, a month to build. These are $6,000 drones that are delivering payload. And it's an entirely different, and that's a, again, it may solve this problem, you know, but it's also going to be a huge problem. What's happening in Ukraine is, I mean, I know we're getting off past iPads, but it is very dangerous for the rest of the world of the innovation that's happening there, because we're not giving them enough support. They're figuring it out. And as they figure it out, it's going to put everyone at risk. So
basically, you're saying give them the expensive weapons so they don't come up with
exactly.
Cheap,
give them the expensive weapons. Give them the weapons and the things that they're asking for, because their solution really puts all of us at danger.
That's
later.
A really interesting point. Yeah,
you know, they are figuring it out, and they will continue to figure it out. And what would, you know, in our own best self interest, we should be giving them pretty much everything that they need so that they don't have to do that.
Yeah.
Mercedes-Benz says, no, Apple, you can't take over all the screens. In a Decoder interview, Mercedes CEO Ola Kalanios explains why Apple is not going to get that immersive version of CarPlay they showed off in Mercedes. I'm going to bet that Mercedes is not alone in this, that most car makers are reluctant to let Apple take over the whole cockpit, but maybe I'm wrong.
No, this was always the knock from the beginning, I think, is that the, you know, car makers want to have some control over the experience in their cars, and that Apple saying, well, what we would like to do is have your car become basically an extension of everybody's smartphones. People do love their smartphones. I think that the CarPlay has a place, but even when they announced this, I think a lot of people who know the car industry, and I talked to some of them, said this is an overreach. Because a lot of these companies just, like, Apple's overplaying its hand with CarPlay. People like CarPlay, but to, like, I get it. You're Mercedes. You're selling your brand and your experience, and then saying, well, once you get into the car with your phone, all the Mercedes stuff goes away and is replaced with Apple stuff. I can see why a car company would not want to go that far, right?
Yeah.
And definitely one like Mercedes. I think that there's other ones like Hyundai or other brands that are trying to gather, you know, another brand that is trying to bring people to it. You know, I think that there are Apple users that would pick that car over another car because they had the environment that they, you know, the Apple user has the environment that they want. So I think there's a sell to there, but I don't know if Mercedes is the right brand that needs to have that sell. And I definitely agree with you that they're going to be more touchy about having that experience controlled by somebody else.
And there's also a point of pride. I mean, designers, Apple would never sell, hey, either buy a MacBook Air as is, or we'll just sell you the screen and the CPU and the keyboard, and you build your own case around it. We'll be happy with whatever design language you come up with. Like, no, the designers of cars, they don't just design like the bumpers and the headlights and the turn signals and the seats. They do also design the indicators and the dashboard and the user interface to be part of the same effort that goes into the rest of the car. So yeah, why would they want to basically say that Apple, you get to design the most savory part of the sensory experience when driving a car, the stuff that you touch, the stuff that you look at every single time.
And the real challenge is that the problem is Apple's generally better at it than they are. So that, you know, like most interfaces for most cars are not nothing to write home about. I mean, I apologize. A lot of them put a lot of money into it, but you look at them and they always feel like they're a couple generations behind what Apple and, you know, even Google are doing. So I think that's the challenge that they have, is that, you know, to stay up to speed. Some of the best interface designers are at Apple, and a lot of that stuff, you know, having the look and feel, again, it's, are you looking to be a different, have a differentiating factor over other cars with that interface? And if you're not, then it doesn't make sense. If you are, then it does.
Kalanios told Nilay Patel, we're not fundamentalists to say for some reason we're not going to allow a customer to use Apple CarPlay if that's what they choose to do. I don't know why he sounds like Werner Herzog, a fast Werner Herzog. So we have Apple CarPlay, we have Android Auto. If for some of the functions you feel more comfortable with that and will switch back and forth, be my guest, you can get that too. But to give up the whole cockpit head unit, in our case, a passenger screen and everything to someone else, the answer is no. You know, I recently got a new all-electric BMW. And I at first, one of the reasons I wasn't interested in Tesla is because Tesla doesn't do CarPlay or Android Auto. They have their own thing. And Tesla's isn't bad, but I just wanted CarPlay. I love CarPlay. BMW supports CarPlay, but it's interesting because they don't really want you to live in CarPlay. CarPlay is almost a second screen. You can switch to CarPlay and you could keep that screen up all the time. But most of the time, the way it's designed, they want, and they have their own nav, their own apps. They have an app screen. And you're absolutely right, Alex. Even with all the money BMW has, it's not anywhere near. It's, you know, four generations behind, even though it's a brand new vehicle. It feels almost grudgingly say, well, we know you want CarPlay. We're not going to go full GM on you. We're going to let you use CarPlay, but we're going to make it kind of be
not the first thing you use all the time. They own the screen. And I think most car manufacturers who can will do that.
And I think the hard part is that as soon as someone has CarPlay, as soon as an Apple user has CarPlay, they stop interacting with the
I didn't actually. I stay in the BMW, really? And what they have is a hybrid screen. So if I'm listening to an audiobook, I can see that. I can go to CarPlay. When a text comes in, CarPlay loads up and then it goes back. They have a hybrid screen. And I thought at first I would live in CarPlay, and no, in fact, I don't. I go back to the hybrid screen most of the time because there's some functionality in the BMW screen that isn't in the CarPlay. It knows more about the car. That's the other thing, is that Mercedes and BMW and these other companies don't want Apple to have all that information. They want to keep that.
I think, I wonder whether some of Apple's closing down their car program had to do with the fact that they weren't going to get any traction with the car companies while they're making their own car. If they stop making their own car, then maybe...
Then they're not competition. Yeah.
Maybe.
My car, the BMW runs, I believe it's Android, is the operating system. It's not some other real-time OS. It's what is BlackBerry own? I forget. QNX. Rim. It's not QNX. It's, BlackBerry owns QNX. And a lot of car manufacturers do that. Ford has its own, but a lot of people now are using Android, which is interesting. So it's got an Android backend with CarPlay running on top of it, with the BMW stuff on top of that.
And I have to admit, most of my experiences, I have my wife's car has, CarPlay, and as soon as you go in, it has a car, and which I find to be actually more difficult for me to use with my phone than my high tech version in my Dodge Caravan, which is a 1/8-inch jack.
Yeah. Just plug it in and I can hear.
I have a little peak design adapter attached to my thing, and I just have my phone there and I snap it on, and I have an 1/8-inch jack, and that's how I interact with my own car. But when I get into other cars, I get to play with CarPlay with all, rental cars, you get to play with like what does it do and how does it work?
I have to say, when I rent a car, I always say, please give me one with CarPlay, because otherwise you're suffering. It is not a good experience.
I have to admit, because I'm so used to it, I take my little attachment and I just attach it to every, I just have it on the outside of every car, and I just go, I know that there's an 1/8-inch jack in here somewhere, and all I want to do is listen to music. Because I don't use it for phone calls, because I don't like the way people sound in their car, and so I don't want to sound like that. So I use the headset so that it sounds, so I sound cleaner.
Yeah.
so I'm always on the Bone induction headset when I'm driving, so that I don't have to sound like I'm in a car.
Did I miss anything you guys wanted to talk about before we go to the picks of the week? I'm cognizant of your time limitation. Andy only put in enough quarters to use that room till one for another 20 minutes, right?
I'm out at 4, although I've been told that no one has booked the space yet. That was a couple hours ago.
Okay.
So. Can I ask you some of that time to say that I was trying to figure out what it is that's kind of like distracting me. I have finally figured out I look like a judge. Like
you do, Your Honor. I am not a cat. You do. With the law books behind you? Yeah. Your Honor.
I feel like I speak a little more authoritatively now when I say about.
Can you make me a cat? And then that would be perfect. It would be a perfect simulation. Well, Your Honor, thank you, Your Honor, Judge Inocco, for joining. Are you a judge or a justice? Is it? I'm not sure.
I'll allow it. You're on thin ice, counselor. You better be hitting somewhere with this line of questioning.
$1,000 fine for me actually would be significant. It really would start to add up, All right, let's take a little time. Jason, anything you want to mention? Somebody put in Joanna Stern's hysterical article in the Wall Street Journal. In which she drops phones, a Samsung phone and an iPhone, from a drone. A DJI drone, I note, 300 feet in the air to test their durability. Incidentally, now that they've done such a good job banning TikTok, Congress is considering banning DJI. They're going to have the FCC, or they're proposing to tell the FCC, don't let DJI to connect to the phone telecommunications networks in the United States, which would put them out of business in the U.S. anyway, because it's a Chinese company, in case you didn't know. So she says, how did the iPhone survive falling out of the 737 Max when its fuselage ripped open? Well, anybody looking at this phone will know it's the screen protector, right? That really made the difference in the fall. She's. I think it has. I'm going to guess it has something to do with terminal velocity. Am I wrong? Can only That's go right. so fast, right?
Yep.
Yeah. She did a two or three different drop tests onto asphalt and onto grass of different heights after determining through consultations with experts that the 300 feet with terminal velocity was just as good as whatever the height of that airplane was. And I think it was a bit of fun. I think the only conclusion was that, yeah, it depends on whether it's in a case or not. And it depends if it has the bad luck of landing on an edge.
Yeah.
But the Samsung did break with one of the drops, and I don't think any of the iPhones broke.
Yeah. I just want to point out that 10 years ago, Lisa and I climbed to the roof of the old brick house studio and dropped phones off of it. So, look, we didn't have drones at the time, but this is, we did that already. We've done it. And I can't remember. We probably have video somewhere if I could find it in our, maybe Patrick, can you find that in our archives? I think we were testing not the phone protection, but the OtterBox case protection to see if it would survive the drop. And as I remember it, I can't remember. I think they broke. It was cement. We were dropping them on cement from about, I don't know, 30 feet up. It wasn't that high. It wasn't 300. We'll take a break when we come back. Picks. Thank you, gentlemen. Our show today brought to you, and I mean literally brought to you by our content delivery network, Cashfly. You've heard me say it a million times. MacBreak Weekly's bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is brought to you by CashFly at CacheFly.com. For over 20 years, CashFly has held the track record for high-performing, ultra-reliable content delivery, serving over 5,000 companies in over 80 countries. We've been using it since pretty much we started because we found out pretty quickly that with the number of downloads we have, you couldn't just put it on a website. You had to have something. Thank you, Matt Levine, for coming to our rescue. And ever since, we have loved their lag-free video loading, their hyper-fast downloads, their friction-free site interactions. I just love it because our listeners don't even really know. They don't have to know. They just know it comes in fast and fine, and they never have any problem with it. CacheFly is the only CDN built for throughput, which is ultra-low latency video streaming, delivering video to over a million concurrent users with latency of less than 1 second. Amazing. Lightning fast gaming delivers downloads faster with zero lag, glitches, or outages. Mobile content optimization offers automatic and simple image optimization so your site loads faster on any device. And we love it because CacheFly offers flexible month-to-month billing for as long as you need. And then once you've kind of got it all figured out, discounts for fixed terms. You design your own contract when you switch to CacheFly. We literally deliver petabytes a month through CacheFly. CacheFly delivers rich media content up to 158% faster than other major CDNs and allows you to shield your site content, ensuring a 100% cache hit ratio. And with CacheFly's elite managed packages, you'll get the VIP treatment. Your dedicated account manager will be with you from day one, ensuring a smooth implementation and reliable 24/7 support when you need it. Learn how you can get your first month free at cachefly.com, CacheFly.com/twit. 1 month free at cachefly.com/twit. Pick of the week time. We'll start with Alex Lindsay this week. Alex?
I have a new case. You always have to have a new case. I got a new case.
A new case. What kind of case?
I was over at Colleen Ooh. Henry's, and this was like her favorite case. Oh. Now it's my favorite case. Oh. So anyway,
pretty.
This is Alpaca, and this is a Elements Tech Brief Pro. And what I was looking for was something that was a briefcase, but briefcases that I had, like, so if I'm going to meetings and so on and so forth, and I want to have something that I can use as a backpack, I want to use it. I want to have all the little pockets that I need, everything else. And I had some, but they looked really nice, and they were leather and everything else. But they didn't solve this problem. And so what I really wanted was something I could swap back and forth. And so, Colleen kind of, this is what I'm using. And so anyway, so basically, you know, what's cool about it is you have these handles, but the handles will tuck in. So you can have them disappear and turn it into either a shoulder cross capture, or on the back of it, you can open it up here and you can actually pull out shoulder pads, you know, or shoulder sleeves on both shoulders, which if you have a lot of weight, you don't want to really put that weight over one side or another. So you can kind of decide, I want to hold this like a briefcase. I want to put it over one shoulder. I want to put it over both shoulders. In addition to that, you've got a lot of, you know, options as far as there's lots of great big pockets. Those pockets will hold iPads as well as your 16-inch MacBook Pro or other things like that. So if you're going down for something here, you can see kind of a lot of layered pockets here that make it work. And it's very well padded and sturdy. You've got a water resistant, you can see kind of a water resistant zipper technology, as well as on the back here, it has the, you can slot the slide through for your carry-on. So you can open it up there. And, you know, I think a lot of things have each piece of these things, but having kind of a very durable one that looks nice, at least now until I use it 1,000 times. You know, I was pretty excited about it. So anyway, and so it's a nice one as far as, again, this is going to be my new kind of, this is when I'm going somewhere. You know, this is what I'm going to be taking with me on a day trip kind of thing, you know, so nice. I needed something that wasn't quite so rugged as my, backpack, you know, that I have a Rush 24 that I've been using for, you know, 15 years. So, and it's still, but it looks a little like I'm camping when I go to a nice meeting. So
yeah, this being is able to have a little dressier. Stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, a little dressier, but still has the things that I needed. The thing is, I had other dressier ones. They just didn't have all these features built into them.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, having something that's a little bit more durable and rugged, but also has the things that will look nice when I show up at a meeting is useful. Since I'm doing a little bit of more of that, I still try to avoid it as much as possible, but still do it. So having something there is a big upgrade for me.
From Alpaca with a K, Alpaka. gear.com, the Elements Tech Brief Pro, $139. You reminded me, I've been meaning to tell people about this isn't going to replace your Elements Tech Brief Pro, but it's a really handy thing. When we went down to Mexico, I wanted to have something I could bring my stuff down to the beach and then keep it safe, lock it up. And Lisa, a few years ago, I think it's maybe like almost 10 years ago, for Christmas one year, gave me this, the Lock Tote. LOCTOTE anti-theft bag. And it is really fantastic. They make these bags out of basically metal lined. This is the one I have, which is kind of can be a backpack. It's a beach bag, really. I think we brought the site to its knees. never mind. I won't click around. Whoops. But I love it because you can tie this onto something permanent, one hopes, although I was often doing it on a lounge chair, but I figure if people are going to steal my stuff, I guess they'll have to steal the lounge chair with it.
You can catch up to them if they're trying to.
Yeah, it's a little easier to catch it.
Yeah.
And it has a padlock with a combination, so you don't have to bring a key with you or anything. This thing is incredible. The straps are steel reinforced. The material is knife proof. I have the kind of the bag, I guess they call it. But you're not going to bring this to your board meeting, but when you want to go to the beach, or actually I used to use it at CES to leave stuff in the media room. I put all my stuff in it, cinch the bag up, wrap it around a table leg and lock it in. And, it was really good. Well, I guess a table leg wouldn't be the best thing to lock it into. The lock and leave system, and it's from Lock Tote. And I've been meaning to tell you about this since I got back from Mexico, because I use this every single day. We went down to the beach every single day, and I just really love it. LOCTOTE. They have a variety of different ones. I think I have the anti-theft sack is, what I have. And again, maybe, you know what? It could be my, ad blocking stuff too, which often blocks this kind of stuff. Yeah. Maybe it's down. I don't know. LOCTOTE. Andy, pick of the week.
I'm going to go with the Kirstein Business Library and Innovation Center here at the Boston Public Library. I've been coming to the BPL for years and years and years. I had no idea this place exists. It's like an entire floor of the library that's just set up for, as they say, media creators, innovators, job seekers, entrepreneurs, nice. Nonprofits, investors, coders, and makers. And so when I was supposed to be on the show last on Thursday, Trump, as usual, I always seem to get bumped whenever Trump like is in some sort of a legal trouble. So I got bumped because of the Supreme Court stuff. This is the first day where I could be rescheduled. And it's like, oh God, I can't like miss Mac Break. I don't want to miss Mac Break. Like, is there like a room? I would love to be in the studio. like, oh, we'll actually, you know, we'll get you a space like in the business center, and like business center. And it's a wonderful, wonderful space. So if you, I did check and ask in anticipation of this pick of the week, you do not have to have like a Boston Public Library card in order to reserve one of these rooms here or use its resources. I think that you do have to have one to use the website to make a booking. But and if you don't have access to the Boston Public Library, check your local library or your closest city library. Just Christmas tree the entire website just to see exactly what's available. It's sometimes you're shocked to find out that, wow, you mean that that time that I put myself through hell because I did not have a Sawzall, I could have just gone to my local library 2 miles away, borrowed a Sawzall, and brought it back 48 hours later for nothing. Yeah, it's kind of amazing the stuff that's available at your library if you actually find out what's there.
It's really true. We should plug the library a lot more often. Libraries these days have become a great resource center. It's not just books anymore. Boston Public Library, bpl.org. Book your creator's room. You see, you don't need a WeWork, do you, Andy? You just, and does the law library exactly. come? It comes with the room, which is great.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Again, you get the dignity of...
Justice,
I brought you to my chambers because I'm, you can replay every CSI, every evening police procedural. I'm tired of the circus that you've been putting this court through for the past 4 weeks. We're going to close testimony in 4 days. 1, 2, 3, 4 days. And I don't care what objections you have. Are you on with me on this? Okay, let's go back to the court.
Your Honor, I'm not a cat. So thank you, Boston Public Library. And thank you, Andy, for going the extra mile to both do GBH and to be here for Mac Break Weekly. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for your patience.
I'm sure that wasn't easy.
I'm glad things worked out in the end.
We're going to put you back on the train and have a safe trip home. Jason Snell.
I got closed up in case there are entrepreneurs who are waiting to use this room.
It's time for the entrepreneurs to move in. Jason Snell, sixcolors.com, your pick of the week, my friend.
One more outburst and I'll clear this courtroom. real quick one. So Grammarly, I am somebody who doesn't always have an editor and I'm posting things to the internet, and it's really useful to have another set of eyes. So I, at the suggestion of my friend Glenn Fleischman, I signed up for Grammarly about a year ago.
Longtime sponsor, by the way, of the show, we should mention just as a disclaimer.
Fair enough. I didn't get any of that money. Anyway, it's
no,
good.
You did not.
I only look at, it has a lot of like style suggestions that I'm not interested in, but it's got a little button called correctness or correction, where it's just things that are wrong. And the fact is, spell check doesn't find words that are other words, but in context don't make sense. There's like commas, and occasionally it'll just take a sentence and say, I need to fix this. And a couple weeks ago, I did a story, like I do a couple of times a year, I did one of these report cards on Six Colors, and this was for the IT and enterprise people. So it's like Mac support people. These people are incredibly smart and technical and not necessarily really great at writing. And they wrote 25,000 words in summation about how they feel about Apple and the enterprise and where they are and where they're going. And guess what? Grammarly saved my butt, because Grammarly was able to very quickly go through there and get all the capitals and the commas and all of that working. So that's the service. It's really nice. People might not know, though, you can do this in a web browser. They've got an iPad app, but on the Mac, they've got a desktop app, and it works with pretty much any app you want it to. Like, I use BBEdit, which is not really a common writing app, but I use it. It works in there. It underlines all the words. It uses accessibility settings on the Mac, and I can click and I can say, fix this, and it rewrites it all. And it happens in BBEdit or your email client or your web browser or pretty much wherever you want to have text on the Mac. And that is a thing I did not know until about 6 months ago. And I don't actually have it on most of the time, but when I get to that end point, or I'm looking down the barrel of 25,000 words that really needs a pass and I don't want to do it piece by piece, I can open Grammarly for Mac, and my BBEdit window or whatever window ends up immediately getting processed, and all that detail is in there. It's super convenient. So you may have another selection. There are lots of choices out there for things like grammar checkers. You could even use a chat bot, but I found that this is a really nice backstop, because you know what happens. It looks perfect, and then you post it to the internet, and the moment you post it to the internet, you start to see the errors that are in it and you have to fix them. I'd prefer to minimize that process. So I run it through Grammarly first, and it's helpful. It'll find those weird, it's the words that are other words. That's not the word you mean. Oh, they're not typos. They're thinkos. You got to get them out of there.
Grammarly, we should also mention, besides being a sponsor, is proudly based in Ukraine. So you're supporting a Ukraine tech company, which, you know, of course, it's hard times right now. And they do use AI. I should also say that maybe you want to get your copy editors at Macworld to use it, because I don't think it's generative AI. I just might run that through Grammarly.
It's sure. Yeah, you know where all their typos are? All their typos are in captions and headlines that they add later.
Because they don't run it through Grammarly. Yeah.
No, they don't. No, because it's in the CMS at that point.
Yeah,
and you can only insert that in the CMS.
Yeah, too late.
And that's where they all are, is the subheads. I get these emails that are like, oh, there's the subhead is wrong. It's like, okay, one, I didn't write
it. I didn't write it.
My editor did.
Yep.
And two, they type that in a box. They do need it. They need it in their web browser. So
yes, they do. You can get Grammarly in your browser, as a matter of fact.
You can. There's a plugin.
Yep. Not to give them a plug, but the plugin is a good plug.
I was already plugging.
Yeah, you were plugging.
Just added.
Yeah.
Add to the plug.
Thank you, Jason. Sixcolors.com. You see his writing everywhere in Macworld as well. And of course, sixcolors.com/Jason will show you all of the very many wonderful shows that he participates in and creates. We had Shelley on for you last week from The Incomparable, and she's Shelley Brisbane.
Sure.
She's great and does some wonderful shows on your network as well. Any podcast you want to plug for this week?
I'll point people to Upgrade again. We always have a good time talking about tech topics. If you are not already full of Apple-related podcast material, check it out. It's me and Mike Hurley. So he's got a British accent, and he talks about his account being locked while he was hiking in the Lake District.
Amazing.
So, pretty fun.
Got to tell him to abandon Basic, however. That was you, GoTo 10.
That was me, and I said it wrong. I was talking about line numbers, and I said 10 print Jason is cool, 20 print GoTo 10. I thought, well, no, that's wrong. That'll just print GoTo 10.
GoTo 10. Won't print
that's
anything.
Not what you
it'll
want.
It'll lock up and you'll never see it again. You'll never use your computer again. I love it. Jason, always a pleasure. Thank you for being
here. Thank you.
Alex Lindsay, officehours.global. What's going on these days?
So we were talking about Epic. The funny thing here, we talk about how Epic shouldn't be, you know, whatever. I talk about that. On Office Hours, we all talk about Unreal all the time and how much we love it.
The amazing engine that Epic does. Yeah.
And so we talked a little bit about the Epic updates. They've got a new motion designer that is amazing. And so we're going to be covering more and more of that. We had a little introduction today. Tomorrow, we actually have the senior marketing development manager from Sure, Laura Davidson, coming on to talk about mic selection. So, like, how do you make those decisions?
Andy should be watching that one, I think.
and then we're talking about telling stories with editing and the process that we use in that on Thursday. And then also talking about general cloud tech on Friday, which is basically what are we seeing on the horizon? What have we seen? We had Cultivate on yesterday. It's an ad agency. And so you know, as usual, there's lots of different things to look at. Also, I would highly recommend going back and looking at some of what we did at NAB. We think it was pretty groundbreaking in the way we covered it.
Yes.
There's a shelf on our YouTube channel. So if you go to youtube.com/officehoursglobal, you'll see it there. And it was pretty exciting. We think that we're going to see a lot more of that. This kind of direct interview on site from a handheld is something new that was extremely successful for us, and you might want to see a little bit of it.
Nice.
It's the first time we've ever seen it done.
When you talk to Shure, get them to send Andy one of their Motive mics, which works wonderfully on an iPad. That's all I use on iOS, is the MOTIV mics. They're designed for iOS.
And we've used the MV7 with the iPad successfully.
Love the
as well.
MV7.
It just jumps right on it. So there's a lot of good ones. We use a lot of Shure.
I'll send Andy a mic that'll work on his iPad.
We've used the MV7 often with iPads.
Yeah.
It's pretty
They call it a podcast microphone. It's got USB on it. Yeah. Do you use the 7 or the 7 Plus?
7 Plus is brand new, so we haven't used it yet. We are definitely taking a look at it. But that's a brand new product that I believe they just released at NAB. I think it's got a little more gain to it and a couple other things. And so, right now I've got a bunch of MV7s. We send those out to most of our guests when we have them on, just because They're relatively simple. They're USB or XLR, and they're easy to they're relatively easy to set up for somebody. And the off-axis rejection, of course, is great.
Because they're large coil dynamic mics like we use with the ILPR-40. Alex Lindsay, Andy Iannacco, Jason Snell, you guys, it's great to have you. You know, it's even better to have all of our fabulous Club Twit members who make this show possible, who are keeping the network on the air. If you're not yet a member of Club Twit, I just want to extend a personal invitation. Sometimes people say, oh, I don't want to pay $7 for podcasts. You're not. You're paying $7 to join the most amazing community in the world, the Club Twit community. They're fantastic. We've got the Discord. We've got the shows, of course. We've got additional programming we don't put out anywhere else. They are awesome. So if you're not yet a member, $7 a month's not much to ask. It really does help us on our bottom line. Plus, you get ad-free versions of all the stuff we do and video for everything. Twit.tv/Club Twit. We thank you for your support. We do Mac Break Weekly every Tuesday, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Or actually, supposed to be 11 to 1. It was today. 11 to 1 Pacific. That would be, 2 to 4 East Coast time. It'd be 1800 UTC. I mentioned that because we do stream it live on YouTube, youtube.com/twit. But for most people, the easiest way to consume our shows is to download them. Whether you go to the website, twit.tv/MBW, that's where the show notes are as well. On YouTube, there's a dedicated video channel for Mac Break Weekly. You know, the New York Times says video podcasting is the next big thing. That's really good to know. We'll have to start to think about that. You can also get audio or video by subscribing, and that way you get it automatically. Use your favorite podcast client and point it to Mac Break Weekly. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time. But now I have to say, it's my sad duty to tell you, get back to work because break time is over. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.